So that's kind of a good cultural piece to have in place and a good understanding to have in place, but that doesn't give you so much brass tacks that you can start putting down.
So I'm actually going to fight everything all the time.
Wouldn't you have that
too?
How
is that different than how we've been doing things up until now?
Oh, I'm going to put 10% more fight into it.
10%? You're giving it your all.
My all.
Welcome to The Critical Path with Mary and Jason, a podcast about business development, company culture, and loving the place you work just a little bit more. This is episode 18, and we're going to be talking about understanding productive conflict.
I don't like that.
Well,
I actually have some real conflict right now.
Do you?
I wasn't in the introduction.
I'm sorry. Welcome to The Critical Path with Mary and Jason and Dakota. A podcast about business development, company culture, and loving the place you work just a little bit more, which Dakota does not if he's not listed in the podcast intro.
Can we call this the redo?
I'm playing this whole thing straight through. I'm not editing any of that.
So like R-E-D-U-X?
Yeah, they get to hear the introduction twice because I flubbed it, and they get to hear that I screwed up.
Right.
Ooh. But you're God here.
Look, God makes mistakes.
She couldn't make it go to us.
Yeah, God makes mistakes because...
Is a platypus a mistake?
That or like a really interesting science experiment?
Actually, a platypus is an alien, which means it just comes from a different God. The point is, God makes mistakes because you can't learn anything if you don't make any mistakes. And if you couldn't learn anything, then you'd be a pretty shitty God.
We're getting into uncomfortable, unproductive conflict.
Nuh-uh!
Okay, so why are we talking about... This type of conflict.
So before we talk about productive conflict, do we have any housekeeping? We haven't seen Jarrett this week, I mean...
Life without Jarrett, man. We're going to see him shortly, though. Talked about a book club.
Yeah, that should be interesting. More about that if we get it rolling out. Okay, so anything else for housekeeping, or does that cover it?
We're going to create hard hat stickers.
Yes, we are.
That we're going to roll out with our training sessions.
Yes. So if you're hearing this podcast, and we should put something out on LinkedIn too, mm-hmm. that if you've ever been to any of our classes and you would like a hard hat sticker to advertise that you've been there, then get a hold of us. Or no?
No.
You have to come after we rolled them out?
No. We'll see. It's negotiable.
I mean, how many people are going to listen to this podcast and have been in a class and call us and verifiably and rememberably have been in a class?
Jarrett will totally be doing it.
Jarrett totally gets a sticker. That's the thing.
Well, I feel like he'll get like 4 stickers.
He gets all the stickers.
Yeah.
He's Jarrett.
Here we go. So thanks to Mayor Drywall for that suggestion.
We are talking about productive conflict. So we recently had our episode where we talked about the shared reality model of conflict management. Mm-hmm. But as we've been kind of rolling this out and talking about it with people, it becomes evident that there are really 2 separate problems with conflict management. So the first one is people don't know how to handle conflict. And a new model for handling conflict is helpful in that. But there's another part that is, once you know how to handle conflict, people still avoid conflict. Mm-hmm. People would prefer not to have conflict and will go a long way to not be in the middle of conflict situation.
So is there a place to talk about the difference between confrontation and conflict? So traditionally, let's say in management education, oftentimes I would hear confrontation is good,
mm-hmm.
conflict is bad. That was the conventional wisdom that I was given.
I
didn't buy into it.
Yeah, I believe that's incorrect. Mm-hmm. Because confrontation is facing a problem head on. Conflict is 2 ideas that aren't the same as each other. 2 ideas that aren't the same as each other is not a bad thing. That's ridiculous. That is the heart of the problem that we're talking about today.
I think that's the platypus.
There's nothing wrong with the platypus.
So when 2 ideas are different, so we don't know how to handle conflict. Mm-hmm. And
conflict is 2 different ideas mm-hmm. that cannot occupy the same space. Mm-hmm. So 2 different ideas. So the platypus is not conflict. The platypus is several different ideas that don't fit together, they don't seem to make sense together, but you can have all of them in one animal. When we have 2 ideas that cannot both come to fruition, cannot both happen at once, that's a conflict.
Like, I want you to tell me a story from the last page to the first page. Dakota wants you to tell a story from the front to the back.
There you go. You can't do both of those things at the same time.
So how about we do it the right way?
From the middle out?
To give an example of why conflict is so important, I had a conversation, this was not this past weekend, but the previous weekend, with my 13-year-old son, who, as he comes into being 13, is very avoidant of conflict.
Man, I remember being 13. I didn't avoid anything.
You didn't avoid conflict when you were 13. But he does. So what will happen is when he says something and someone contradicts him, he will completely and immediately back off. He will say, okay, fine, whatever. Fine, do it your way. And he will disengage and he will walk away from that situation.
And he left the negotiating table.
He leaves the negotiating table. And we were talking about why in families that's not a good thing. He said, isn't it good if I don't want to fight with anybody? Isn't it good if I just want to get along? And I said that when you don't push, when you don't advocate for your ideas, then we don't get to have the benefit of your ideas. Mm-hmm. We need your ideas at the table all the time, even when those don't fit with the ideas that everyone else is putting forth. And that is very much true at a company. We really need to all advocate for our ideas because that's how the best ideas come forth. I read a quote that said, if you have a table and there are 10 people sitting at the table and they all agree with the same idea, nobody has any other idea, you have the wrong 10 people in the room.
When we just disengage and go to our separate corners, then we are worse on all sides.
Mm-hmm. So this brings us to the idea of productive conflict versus destructive conflict. So destructive conflict is conflict that ends up with us calling names, yelling at each other, angry, unhappy, walking away feeling unresolved, feeling bad, and it tears teams down. Productive conflict is when we throw two ideas against each other and the stronger idea comes out of that, obvious, and the whole team feels better about the idea as a result.
So you started with talking about productive conflict, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, with destructive conflict, mm-hmm. and then moved on to productive conflict. Mm-hmm. In my experience, a lot of the time, we go to destructive conflict when either we're losing or we have nothing else to say. That is kind of that we've already burnt everything down and realized we're not going to win, and then we go into the destructive mode.
I don't know that that's true. I think a lot of times we go...
That's what I do.
I think, well, you're a different case. I think often we immediately go to destructive conflict because we're afraid of conflict,
yep.
because we don't know what else to do, because we feel insecure, and because we don't know how to have productive conflict. So something about us is, you know, everyone who knows Arcade knows we play a lot of games. And anyone who's played games with us knows that we play hard against one another.
Lots of trash talking.
Lots of arguing.
You call that trash talking?
Arguing about the rules. If we think that the other is interpreting the rules wrong, we will have that out. And no one is ever angry and no one is ever upset. That is how you have fun playing a game. That's why both of us were told when we were kids that we were going to grow up to be lawyers.
True.
So, and that's productive conflict. It's, we're having fun playing that way. We're engaged. We're lit up. We're enjoying it. And productive conflict doesn't feel bad. It feels good. So there's a term that's called conflict debt, and it's something that we see all the time. So when we avoid productive conflict at every turn, when we continually avoid productive conflict, we start to accrue what's called conflict debt. And it is the inefficiency of running a business that starts to happen because of that avoidance of conflict. So when we have a business where people are constantly finding workarounds to get around a person that they don't want to have conflict with, they are accruing conflict debt. And all that time and energy that they lose every time they go to that workaround is conflict debt.
So if you have a problem with someone or a conflict with someone and you just bottle it up or mm-hmm. hold your breath or do whatever you can to not confront that person at that time, mm-hmm. that feeling doesn't go away,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the situation where kind of the wound festers, it gets worse over time, mm-hmm. and you get bottled up until you can't take it anymore.
Yeah. Absolutely. So a few different kinds of conflict debt, some of the ways that that manifests. It can manifest organization-wide at the whole company. So we can see that coming out in prioritization issues. So this is where we have to make choices. Maybe there are resources and two different departments want those resources. And so because of that conflict inherent in that situation, we will just continually avoid that issue. And we can't prioritize what's more important because we can't deal with leaving one of those departments being less important, one of those teams being less important, one of those objectives being less important. So instead of dealing with that conflict, of hashing it out and figuring it out what comes first, we just keep avoiding it. And that is conflict debt.
It's like cleaning your room.
Mm-hmm.
Kids, pay attention.
So we see innovation issues where...
Clean your rooms. That's what I was getting at.
Often, some of the best innovation comes from teams of very diverse people with diverse perspectives and diverse viewpoints. So when we avoid putting those people in the same room because of the conflict that comes out of that, the natural necessary conflict, mm-hmm. then we see innovation debt. We see where companies aren't innovating or moving forward because they're unwilling to push those issues.
So part of that is creating the environment where you promote the idea that it's okay to have different opinions.
Absolutely, absolutely. And finally, we see risk issues. So when someone puts a new idea forward, no one else at the table wants to point out the inherent risk that they see there because that's a conflict. If you have an idea and I say, yeah, but doesn't that cause these problems?
Have you thought about this?
If we avoid that, then we take on unnecessary risk.
In construction, doesn't that save you 50 grand by saying, hey, wait, maybe parking will be an issue. Maybe that isn't structurally safe. Maybe that looks dumb.
Have we thought about that?
Have we thought about it? No, we didn't, because my plan's always perfect.
Yep.
And if you don't agree with that, I'm going to go back to my office and lock the door and listen to Winston Churchill really loud.
All right. That's your thing. You can do it.
So that's organizational conflict. Those are conflicts that we will see organization-wide.
Wait, Dakota, you can't do that.
Screw
you, buddy.
Are you making
no Winston Churchill for you?
Where I can't listen to Winston Churchill monologues?
I'm not sure if you knew this, but Marcella says this is a Churchill-free workplace.
Oh, I'd like to see her on this podcast.
Would you?
Yeah.
We don't let Marcella on the podcast. Her language is an issue.
It is. Marcella.
So next we see team conflict, so conflict that happens within the teams that work together.
So you're saying we're zooming in from the organization,
yes.
talking about teams.
So we just talked about organizational conflict,
yeah.
So the next level is team conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So we see skill gaps in the team because maybe Jason isn't really good at dealing with Office 365.
I'm not.
But when he says he'll take that project on, I don't want to call out and say, hey, Jason, maybe someone else would be better suited for this. You're not very good at that. That's conflict. So instead, everyone at the table is quiet while a person who is not best suited, who doesn't have those skills, just takes on the project. And that causes gaps in skill. Instead of where if maybe I called that out and I said, you're not very good at Office 365. And he said, but I really want to take this on. Maybe we'd get him some training or do something in order to actually increase the skill level of the whole team. But instead, we just leave those gaps.
So I'm going to reframe that. Instead of Mary calling me out at not being good at Office 365, I'm going to turn on my Mary voice and say, hey, Mary, I'm sorry.
I don't talk to myself.
Hey, Jason. Do you feel confident about taking on this project, given your skill level? A little bit better than you suck
yes,
at 365,
but I guess my
buddy.
Point is,
I'll be Jason in this one.
Nice.
No, I'm great at Office 365, and I feel a little offended that you take my skills into question.
And I'll be Mary number two, and I'll say, let me know if you need a hand.
Thank you, Mary. I will keep that in mind.
Well, but more importantly, so it's true because Mary is actually really good at Office 365.
But doesn't want to be.
But maybe no one at the table is good at the thing.
And
maybe.
We won't know that.
Right. And so if I know you're not good at it, I'm not good at it, Dakota's not good at it, but I don't call that out when you say you're going to do it, then we have skill gaps mm-hmm. in our team.
And don't know it as a team.
Right, because no one wants to call it out because it's conflict.
Turns out no one at Arcade is good at making foundations. But Dakota's seen concrete poured a couple times, so he figured he could get it done.
Exactly.
I know a guy.
So we see problems with workload balance. So when we're distributing the tasks for some project, if someone on the team is not carrying their weight and no one calls that out, then we can actually do a poorer job on the project because someone's carrying all those tasks and someone else isn't, but no one wanted to call that out. No one wanted to say that out loud because it's conflict.
That just sounds like a pretty classic example of all, like, school projects where the guy's like, oh, I've got her in my group. I don't have to do anything.
That's true. That still happens today, by the way.
I love too, how that was maybe consciously, maybe unconsciously phrased as a guy who says, I've got her in my group.
Oh, it was intentional.
Because it's the girl who always ends up. So, there was a great, our daughter, on International Women's Day, our daughter, she had a teacher who wanted to illustrate why, you know, a lot of the boys were saying there's no point in International Women's Day.
Sexism is over.
Everything is equal now. And so he said, okay, we're going to do an experiment. So to do the experiment, everyone get out half a sheet of paper. And he waits while everybody in the class is getting their things out and tearing their sheets of paper in half. And then when everyone has their half a sheet of paper, he said, okay, if you gave half a sheet to someone, raise your hand. And almost every girl in the class raised her hand. And he was like, if you received half a sheet, raise your hand. And the boys all raised their hand. And he was like, that is what I'm talking about.
Sexism is over.
That's such a good example.
Isn't it? Because if the girls all have half a sheets, they're going to give it away. They don't care. But the boys are the ones who are going to go,
wait.
I'm not going to get out a sheet of paper and then tear it in half. I'll just ask her for hers. Hey, can I have your other half? Like, why not?
But wait, what about the environmental impact of that exercise?
If you can actively communicate passive sexism to classroom, I think it's worth it.
Probably worth, what, there are like 25 kids per class, so something like, what, 12 sheets of paper?
Oh, and they can still use the paper, you know. But totally watch for it in training, because that's showing up somewhere.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Really good.
I was really impressed by that one. So the third thing, so team conflict, we said skill gaps, we said workload balance, and the third piece here is disruptive behavior. So when there's disruptive behavior within the team and no one wants to call it out, we lose productivity. So this could be disrespectful behavior or people being unkind to each other, but this could also be people who talk too much, people who keep talking about their weekend instead of getting the job done. This is kind of leading strong meetings.
It is. Don't respect your space. Don't respect your time. Mm-hmm. Don't think that the role that you're filling is really that important, so you can do this work that I don't want to do.
Keep looking at their phone during the meeting.
Need half sheets of paper.
Right? So there are all kinds of different disruptive behavior.
Hey, Mary, can I have a half sheet of paper?
I don't have any paper. I'm all digital, bro, all the time.
I want a 16th sheet of paper. Can you help me out?
All digital, all the time. I can give you a 16th of a OneNote notebook.
What about that over there? That's yours.
That's my Hummingbird book. We don't tear pages out of the Hummingbird book,
Mary,
Jason.
Hey, Mary, I'm trying to work. Quit disrupting me.
You see what this is like? You see how difficult this is?
Eye roll. Just however heavy you think I can eye roll, a little bit more.
Living my life.
Oh, man.
Okay. So the final set of conflict debt that we will see. We talked about organizational. We talked about within teams. Finally, there's personal conflict. So there's work-life balance, where we don't want to tell Bill Lumberg that we need to go home on Saturday. And so we let people push us to, we let our superiors or peers push us to disrupt our work-life balance because we don't want to deal with that conflict of saying, hey, actually, I've already put in 40 hours this week and I need to not be here on Saturday.
And we talk about that quite a lot in time management, in that time is the only commodity, the only thing you actually own.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not protecting your jar, for those of you who know what that means, if you're not protecting your time.
For those of you who have the hard hat stickers.
That's right. No one else will protect it for you.
So sometimes you need to come in on Saturday because that's what needs to happen. And that's a different discussion. But if the only reason you miss your kid's soccer game is because you didn't want the conflict, you didn't want to look bad for telling your boss or your team that you couldn't make it, that is a conflict debt. So personal development issues. So people who feel like they're stagnant in their job and they want to push and take on more responsibility, or they want opportunities to learn new things, and they don't reach out for that because it's conflict, because they feel like they're going to be perceived as being difficult, being not happy, being they feel like they're going to be pushed down if they reach above their station.
So in our training, we'll ask, what are the reasons that you don't delegate, basically? Is it too difficult? Is it a difficulty in communicating what you want to communicate? Does it take too much time? And typically people say no, but they still want to hold the things that are most important to them. So it's important that we, for the people who want to grow and want to learn, not only are we giving them that opportunity, but we're helping them pull upward so mm-hmm. that they can learn more and do more.
Mm-hmm. I have said before that it's actually one of my favorite things about Dakota, because I can be bad at letting those things go. I tend to do that mom thing where I say, it's fine, I'll just do all these things, and we'll write all the things we're going to do on the board, and Dakota will come in and look at the board and say, you sure? You don't want me to do this thing? Because I can do this thing.
Give me.
It's mine.
Yeah. How about you just let me do this thing? And where normally I would hang on to all of that stuff, when Dakota starts asking those questions and saying, can I do this? It's a different conversation, because then I stop feeling like, well, I'm not going to burden anybody with this little thing. I'm going to just hang on to it. I can feel like, oh, I'm going to give Dakota the opportunity to do a new thing. Dakota just recently got to learn all kinds of Photoshop by helping me with brochure stuff. And I think Dakota really likes Photoshop.
Yeah, it was my favorite tool so far, and I've used it way too much recently, is the lightning tool. I've used the lightning tool a lot, but I only had that opportunity because there was a task that I could grab mm-hmm. and play around with it.
Mm-hmm. And I would have been likely to keep that to myself, because I feel like Photoshop can be really frustrating to work with, and I wouldn't want to put that on someone. But because Dakota came in and said, no, let me do this, I want to, then I said, oh, sure, here you go. And then it made my life a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it can feel like it's going to be a conflict situation, but to reach for those things can actually make everything easier for everyone.
And I feel like, to some extent, if you want to take on more, you want to do more or learn more, you have to fight for that. You have to be willing to have conflict or confrontation, mm-hmm. because what that communicates is that you want to learn. Mm-hmm. You want to take that on. You want to do more. Whereas if you always take the passive role mm-hmm. in for your career, then you will be perceived as taking the passive role. And I'm going to have less confidence in giving that to someone when they're not assertive about taking it.
So if you don't have any interest in doing more than you're doing or learning more than you're learning, then that's one situation. But if you really wish you could do more and you really wish you could learn more, but you don't know how to ask, you're afraid to ask, mm-hmm. Then that is a conflict debt. Mm-hmm. So finally, personal interactions. So if you have peers who treat you poorly and you don't call them out on it, this is just like getting bullied in middle school.
Yeah.
That is a conflict debt, because you're afraid to call that out. You don't want to be the sort of tattletale. And so you are less effective at work. You're less happy at work because you have, I don't know if I should tell this story, but my dad once went over a desk at someone with a three-hole punch for calling him fur hat one time too many.
He was, a dispatcher
mm-hmm.
for a transportation company?
Mm-hmm. And my dad's hair, when it starts to get long, gets super bushy. And this guy just wanted to get under his skin. That was the whole point of it. Wanted to get under his skin and kept calling him fur hat. And he said, if you call me fur hat one more time, we're going to have words. And the guy looked at him and said, fur hat, fur hat, fur hat. And my dad went over the desk and had to be restrained.
Honestly, though, classic fur hat, though, right? Oh.
So my dad was not a victim of conflict debt in that scenario.
Was not. No, he let it all out there.
Yeah, he communicated appropriately yeah. the actions of what happened.
But I think the part there, though, is that I'm sure that wasn't the first time it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It had been building over time.
Oh, absolutely. So, it had been going on for 6 months.
So that was the cost of the personal interaction, right?
I guess
going
that's
over
fair.
The table, that's...
That was the cost of the conflict
yep.
debt, because if he had dealt with it the first time the guy said it, he probably would not have felt compelled to go over the table. So those are some of the ways that conflict debt can look. And I think even though it's not important that you zoom in and figure out exactly what kind of conflict debt you're having, but I think it's easy to say, well, we don't need productive conflict. And when you look at all of those different consequences that we're talking about, those are all things that suffer if we don't have the right amount of productive conflict, if we don't feel like we can speak up about mm-hmm. things. That's kind of what the problem looks like. Mm-hmm. And talking about the solution, like, this can be a hard thing to solve from an organizational standpoint. As a person, you can say, go out, advocate for yourself, you know, just like the conversation that I had with Gowan, which was advocate for yourself in our family. When you have an idea that's different from someone else's, just say that, because this is a place where that's encouraged. But how, as a company owner, can you communicate that this is a place where different ideas are encouraged? So one of the simplest answers is something that's been around since the early 60s, and it's called the Stages of Group Development by a guy named Bruce Tuckman. So a lot of people today have heard of this, and it is forming, storming, norming, performing.
This came from the 60s?
Yes. So the idea is that when we put together a team to work on a project, these are the four stages that a group goes through. So first, the group forms, and in the forming phase, this is when everybody starts kind of throwing ideas out and we kind of put together our initial plan. People are usually pretty polite. We usually kind of grab the first good idea that comes along and kind of just stick this plan to the wall. Mm-hmm. Then we move into what Bruce called the storming phase.
I call him Bruce.
So in the storming phase, this is when members of the group now start to push on the pieces of the plan that we have started to tentatively build. And start to test if those pieces are going to actually work, if those are going to actually be the best. So the reason this is called storming is because this is where a lot of that productive conflict happens, where everyone's pushing against everyone else's ideas. It's easy for people to get a little bit upset, a little bit hurt, a little bit heated. And then we move into norming, which is where we start to really understand where the strengths and weaknesses in the group are, and we start to lean on that.
Everything starts to balance out a little bit.
And then into the performing phase, which is basically like a flow state. It's mm-hmm. where we're clipping along as a team and we're working well together. So the idea of that is that the more that we can kind of teach this and talk about this and understand teams in this way, that idea of that storming phase is the idea of productive conflict, the idea that that is an expected phase, mm-hmm. that is a thing we want to see happen. And a lot of times the reason we avoid conflict at work is because of this idea that people who participate in conflict are troublemakers, and people who just go with the flow are peaceful are better team members, better employees. And that's kind of the thing that we need to pull apart at its core.
Is that conflict's okay?
Right. That not just okay, mm-hmm. but desirable, mm-hmm. and it's part of being a strong team member. So another way to handle this is to kind of map out our team and take a look at what's going on within the team. You draw a circle on the board and divide it up into wedges where there are enough wedges for one for each person, each role on the team.
And then do we fight over who got the bigger piece?
No, they're equal size.
Okay.
So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to make a list of the different roles on the team. And within that list, what we want to do is we want to identify a few things for that role. We want to identify what should this role be paying attention to that might be missed by others. What is something that is uniquely part of this role to pay attention to? So if we had a project team, and we had our finance person sitting in on those meetings being part of that project team, that finance person would be watching pieces of that project that are different from what everyone else is looking at. So there would be specific pieces of that that would be unique to that person, that role.
So what is their superpower?
Right. What is their, but more importantly, it's not just what are they good at, but what are they the only person who is minding? Because that's an important thing to be aware of on a team. If there's something that this role is the only role at the table who's paying attention to this piece, that's something we need to know. So the second thing to answer is, does this role have unique stakeholders or unique definitions for success? So a salesperson on the team might have a different metric for what makes that job successful than a project manager or than a foreman. Mm-hmm. So we look at what everyone's different definitions for success are. The third piece is, what is the most common tension this role puts on team discussions? What issue does this person or team address that causes others to bristle? So if we think back to all of our team interactions, are there issues that this role is constantly nagging about, constantly giving
them a hard time? So it's tied to the role, not the person?
The role, not the person. Because sometimes we'll have multiple people on the team that fill one role. We might have 3 salespeople on the team. That is one role. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So once we have all these pieces, what we want to do is start to add those roles to our wedges in our circle, where we kind of try to think about, are there 2 roles that are, by their very nature, in a healthy and way that it's supposed to be, at odds with one another? So you might say our operations people are at odds with our finance people,
yeah,
because they are kind of carrying different pieces.
Superintendent and project manager.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Are at odds with one another because the operations versus the dollars and cents and profitability are going to be at odds with one another. So how exactly this gets laid out is going to be kind of a push-pull with the team, but we want to kind of look at who is in closer alignment and kind of put them closer together, and who are at odds with one another and put them in opposing wedges.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of this is...
So erasable is good.
Erasable is good. And it's important that this is something that's actually built as a team with the team, not something that the manager just builds and then throws in front of everyone. So the idea of this is it starts to communicate that idea that when we're at odds all the time, it's not because we don't like each other or because we're jerks, but because those are the nature of our roles. We are supposed to be at odds. Our ideas are supposed to be at odds, and we are supposed to both present those. And in fact, you can use that so that when there's a new big idea from that project manager, then we might look to the superintendent and look to the finance person, look at the opposing people on that circle and say, you see any issues with this? What are the problems with this? So then when conflicts come up, we can look at those wedges and understand that you're not shooting my idea down because you don't like me or because you think it's a bad idea. You're shooting my idea down because you have an opposing role, and that's your job. And it's my job to prop my idea up against that opposing role so that we start to see this conflict as a natural part of the push-pull of our organization instead of seeing it as an interpersonal conflict.
Yeah, when it's less about personal conflict and the emotional conflict and more about kind of the strategic or ideological conflict of this is my job and that's your job,
mm-hmm,
and it's our job to work together and push against each other.
Yes.
Just like sumo wrestlers.
So another example of this could be, I'm a mechanic, and I know that I need certain parts, mm-hmm, to do my job. I need to make sure that I have all of these mufflers in.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who watch the money are saying, well, I can't buy you 1,000 mufflers right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's order them as we need them or a little bit closer.
Mm-hmm.
The mechanic might be stressed out on that. He might give pushback. And they could find a good middle ground of when to order those mufflers in a more appropriate time so they can still pay rent and pay their people.
Mm-hmm.
And organizationally, when we see accounting, so accounting folks are traditionally looking backwards in time, and sales folks are traditionally looking forward in time.
Forecasting.
Our realities are completely different. So it's important that we recognize that at the onset and find a way to mesh those and accept some amount of conflict,
mm-hmm,
as being part of the job rather than just personal conflict.
So another upside of having a model like this put together for your team is every time there's a conflict, if you take it back to the pie chart, basically, then you can start to see when destructive conflict is happening. That will also be very obvious. When there's a conflict happening because Bob says to Tom, I don't care about your kids, quit talking about your personal stuff, right, or whatever that is, then we can see that that's not a product of those roles. That's not a product of those differing points of view. This is just an interpersonal piece, and now we can see that this is destructive, and now we can start working on what we want to do about that because it's a different problem.
Why would you say that to me, Mary?
Which one was the one in the wrong, Bob or Tom? Tom sounds like he's a bit of a time vampire.
Good question. As a manager, that would be your job to figure out. But the point is, it's a destructive conflict because either it's a conflict being caused by someone who can't manage their time in a meeting, or it's a problem being caused by someone who is being confrontational about that, or maybe probably a little bit of both. But it's not, this is not based in, you know, when we're arguing over dollars and cents on the project, and then we start to look back at what your metrics are and what my metrics are, or what your important thing to watch and my important thing to watch are, and we see that those things are in conflict, that's a different kind of conflict than when we're arguing over personal things. So the other thing that this can do is it can illuminate other issues that come up in teams, like if someone is having too narrow a view, if your mechanic is really only thinking about his stress level and not what's best for the business, then by wanting to order 1,000 mufflers, that can be clear when we pull back and look at this wedge and we look at the idea that we're trying to balance both of those desires. So also, this can help identify when we have this chart, we can get an idea of team members who are abandoning or neglecting their unique thing that they're supposed to watch. When we realize no one's watching that thing,
who's watching it?
Then that can be a problem.
Right.
Also, when we have imbalances in the team. So this can be when too many people are in a few roles and other roles don't have as many. So if we have 6 salespeople on the team and then 1 PM and 1 superintendent, then that's an unbalanced team. It's too many people in one particular role and not enough in the other, so that our whole team is going to shift in the direction of the priorities of that one role, because every time we vote, we're always going to vote for the interests and values of that one role. So it helps us kind of look at how many roles are really in our team and how many people are really in each role, because we want to have a good balance.
So if you have 100 rowers on the left and 3 rowers on the right,
mm-hmm.
you're always going to move right.
Exactly.
Which is great, because I don't want to move wrong.
No, but you're just going to be in the same spot.
So finally, this lets us see when we have performance goals, and this one's an interesting one, performance goals. So when we look at what everyone's metrics and goals are, if we have goals that don't align with the best interests of the team, that person is going to always be in conflict with the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. And that's a nature of roles that aren't built right, metrics that aren't built right. And something like this chart can kind of help us to see that.
I think many times projects with productive conflict give us a much greater understanding for the project itself.
Absolutely.
Whereas if we don't have the productive conflict, we just kind of pass by it like two ships in the night, and maybe the project gets done on time and well run, but we wouldn't even know it necessarily. So that productive conflict is a way for us to rotate the object that mm-hmm. is the work, that is the project, to understand all sides of it.
Absolutely. We're big fans of productive conflict because Jason and I agree on almost nothing most
nothing.
Of the time.
You wouldn't believe it, but is it always be conflicting? What's the jetpack?
Platypus.
Platypus or sumo wrestlers, one or the other.
How about sumo platypi?
Sumo platypi.
Oh, I want to see that one.
They're not a bipedal creature, so that kind of makes that better.
Right?
It's true. It'd be kind of interesting.
Big old bills.
See, that you could have an interesting photoshopped graphic. With that,
sumo platypi means that there's more than one.
So you can find us at www.thecriticalpathwithmaryandjason.com
or .org or .eu.
Nope, just .com.
I actually don't ever type the .com. I actually just loose Google things.
So what else?
Find us on LinkedIn
at Jason Sturgeon, Mary Sturgeon, Dakota Gates. Or you can find us on the iPods.
You can find us on iPods.
My brain is done.
Yeah.
On the iTunes directory.
Look for us on Hamster.
That's not a thing. You can find us on the iTunes directory and any podcast app that pulls from that to leave us a review so other people can find us.
And we're also running a race this weekend.
No, we're not.
Come out and root for us.
What race?
I'll actually be on the corner of Admiral in California flipping a sign about how to flip signs.
Ooh, that's pretty good. Jason actually will
You're
be
Mr. Swagger.
out on Alaska and California doing his Mr. Swagger tribute dance-a-thon.
That's true.
Wait, but if he'll be there doing that, who will be doing his LinkedIn?
Watch for it. It's coming, boys.
It's going to be unattended LinkedIn.
Ooh, I like that.
That's chapter 2 of my book.
Nice. Unattended LinkedIn. All right, stay tuned for outtakes. I'm sure we have some this week.
Are you kidding? So much.
The entire episode feels like an outtake.
Fair. Yeah, well, we talked for a long time about having some kind of...
badge.
Yeah, some kind of accreditation that you've been in our class. Yeah. So that's a great place to start.
Watch for it. ArcadeWayfinding.org?
No. We can be .org. It's .edu
that
we
can have. Oh, I'm sorry, .edu.
I was going to say, we could have that. It's not hard. Why would you want .org? Are we going to get .net too? Let's get this in Latvia too.
What about .me?
I have a .net site, so that's not it.
That's true. Mary Sturgeon was taken.
No, it wasn't. I liked .net better than .com because I was a writer, not a business. .net.
Always be selling.
What always, are we talking always about? Be charging regardless.
That's right.
We're having conflict in order to show people what conflict looks like.
Is this a good conflict or a bad conflict?
I don't know. Let's keep talking and see if we can find
Let's
out.
See where this
I
goes.
Think .net is dumb.
Yeah, that's a bad conflict. Because the source of that conflict is Dakota being dumb.
Wow. How dare you?
You can tell I'm very invested in this whole .net situation. Okay.
It's okay. I use my .nets to hold all my GIFs.